So there's quite a few questions that have been submitted, as I've been saying. They're great questions. All of them are great questions. And I'm definitely starting to realize we're not going to get to all the questions. So I'm trying to address some of them sometimes in the reflections, the guided meditations. And so while not necessarily directly reading the question, I hope you're noticing those places where I'm touching on something that you have checked in about. So, yeah, I think I'll start with some questions about how the mind works. And one question about how do we work with the mind trying to control the experience? My mind seems to try to want to decide how a receptive sit will be and then try to subtly push the experience towards that. My mind tries to ensure that my awareness is hopping around between different sense experiences. So this the notion of control, I mean, this kind of happens in pretty much any form of meditation practice. Sometimes when we're doing a directed practice, we can also see this. We can see the kind of almost controlling around the breath if we're paying attention to the breath. You know, that it can be difficult to just let the breath breathe itself. Sometimes people have described this. So this notion of controlling experience, you know, this is not just happening in our meditation. This is what essentially what we could say is that like looking, turning and looking towards our experience, we're seeing what our minds usually do. It's like, you know, we don't leave our minds at the door when we sit down to meditate. We get to see the habits and patterns that we've cultivated through our lives show up when we sit down to meditate. And so, you know, this notion of wanting to control how things are so that it's what we think it should be. We have all these beliefs and ideas about what we should be doing and how it should happen, and we try to do that. And so this is a very strong tendency, a human tendency to want to control experience. It's one that the Buddha particularly pointed to. This area around control, he pointed to it as a great place to understand when we can't control experience. So the belief or view that comes with control is that, or that, you know, that comes with the delusion around control is that I can control things. And there's definitely ways that we can shape things, that we can move things in a particular direction. You know, I can decide I'm going to pick up my glass right now, and I can do that. You know, so there's certain ways that we have control, and yet we attribute more power to that, or more we give more weight to it than it actually deserves. And the Buddha actually pointed out that when something is recognized as not being controllable, what typically happens there, right? We typically think, I'm at fault. I must be doing something wrong because I'm not controlling my experience. Or there's something wrong with the world. The world's to blame. We feel perhaps betrayed by the world. So there's reaction when we find ourselves not able to control experience. And the Buddha actually pointed to, you know, this is just nature. This uncontrollability, it's nature. We can't say, may the body be the way I want it to be in this moment. And he said, that's because the body is uncontrollable. The body is not self. He pointed to this directly as a pointer to the understanding of not self. Seeing this uncontrollability. So that was a little riff on controllability. Now to get kind of to the question about how do we work with it when we see the mind trying to do this, trying to control experience. Now the basic practice is to just notice, oh, this is what the mind is trying to do. The mind is trying to make myself, you know, have this kind of experience. Because that lets us kind of get familiar with this activity of wanting to control. Now we might be able to explore too another piece. So when you see that happening, when you see it happening that the mind is trying to push the mind towards a particular experience, and this, your description, the mind tries to ensure my awareness is hopping around between different sense experiences. That comes from that perspective of what you're trying to control, comes from a view that that's what open awareness would be like. The mind moving between various sense experiences. And so there's a perspective in there, there's a view that's informing how the mind wants to control experience. And another piece I'll just offer here or say here is that, well, that's one thing that can happen in open awareness. But in my experience, sometimes what happens in open awareness depends on conditions. I have found the mind moving into concentration from open awareness practice, just by watching the mind, just knowing this was what's happening in this moment. That happened in particular conditions at the forest refuge where there wasn't a lot going on. There wasn't a lot of sense experience around. Very quiet, very still. And that quietude and stillness was what the mind gravitated towards just very naturally. That's what open awareness was taking in. And so the mind moved in the direction of stillness and quiet and concentration. And so open awareness doesn't always mean the mind is noticing a lot of experiences. So that's just one kind of correction of view, perhaps. Open awareness means that we receive what's already happening in the mind. So seeing that the mind is doing something. So in this case, it sounds like you were aware that the mind was kind of engaged to make the experience be a certain way. When you notice that, if you notice that there's a kind of an active engagement to this, a kind of a doing of it, you could explore kind of seeing if you could step back from the doing of it. Let go of the active kind of, you know, sometimes we, a view or perspective comes up and without even being really aware of it, we kind of jump on the bandwagon of that and we start doing it. And then when we become aware, we're realizing that we're actively engaged. It's kind of like, you know, we're sitting quietly and, you know, we're involved in something in our minds and it makes us think of something we're not particularly aware. And then suddenly we're like up and walking across the room. And then if we become aware in that moment, we could say, well, okay, why am I doing this? You know, this may not be necessary. So we can kind of tap into the engagement and intention towards a particular activity and let it go at times. So that can be something to check into in this kind of controlling the meditation experience. Are you actively doing that? And can you let it go? Can you choose to, instead of saying, okay, I'm going to see this, almost a searching kind of for things. Can you let that go and instead just say, well, what's happening here in the mind? Now, you may not be able to let it go because, as the Buddha says, the mind is not self. You know, mental formations are not self. The activities of mind are not self. And sometimes it's not possible to say, may my mental formations be thus, may they not be thus. And so sometimes we might notice the mind is doing that and not be able to stop it, kind of like I described this morning when I saw the pattern of reactivity, just become fully aware and saw the pattern of reactivity unfolding. I couldn't stop that. It was just unfolding, but there was an awareness of it unfolding. And so that then became what I was aware of. And so sometimes we may simply recognize or be able to recognize. So first of all, I'd suggest trying to stop if that's possible. If you find it's not possible, that's a great pointer to, oh, this pattern is not self. It's not a failing that you can't stop it. It's not stoppable because it's a conditioned pattern and it has a momentum. It's already got a momentum. So, but it can be seen. It can be witnessed. We can observe it. And so, and this question indicates there is a knowing of it. There's a possible. You've described it. So it's possible to know it. So this is what it feels like to have a mind that's searching for the next thing. This is what it feels like to want to know the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. That's then opening to what is actually happening in the moment, as opposed to necessarily like being in charge of it. It's a witnessing of that pattern. So another question. Oh, I need to let you know, I have to stop just a little bit early today, about 5 to 7 minutes early. So just a heads up about that. So a question, this has got a long question. I want to try to get the kind of gist of it. So there's a lot going on. Things happening in the current environment and a significant amount of distraction in meditation, a lot of things left undone. It feels like it would be easier if this was a residential retreat to be a little bit more effort, to make a little more effort to continue the meditation. The mind seems to get pulled into these distractions in this kind of form that we're doing. When I'm sitting alone, it's not so much of an issue. So how do I connect in this kind of situation? How do I, so noticing that there's all of this going on in the mind that tends to kind of just get pulled into all of these things. The gist of it here is, part of me thinks this is just how it is right now. Why not just accept it and do the best I can within my current limitations? Just stop worrying about doing it well or right. I would say in general, that's a great perspective, because that kind of movement to want to do it right, that's a kind of a pressure we put on ourselves. And it's just a view about what right is. You know, that if I were doing it right, I wouldn't have all of these other things coming up, as opposed to doing it right, or, you know, it's like being aware is just about, well, what's here, you know? So it's almost like if you're aware, if you know that you're aware, that is doing it right. What's here? Now, it is important, one thing I would point to, and I hear maybe a little bit of this in the question, is being aware or noticing the difference between knowing this is the way things are and complacency. Complacency kind of has, maybe we could call complacency the near enemy of knowing things as they are. Like, oh yeah, it's just like this. Nothing I can do about it. Yeah, okay, you know. So there's a kind of a collapse, a little bit of a collapse with complacency, and maybe even not a full collapse. It's kind of more like, oh yeah, you know, it's just things as they are, you know. Oh, well, it's kind of got that quality to it. It's important to notice if that's where the mind is. So noticing kind of the tone in the mind. This is just how it is right now. Nothing I can do about it. Versus It's like this right now. There's a difference between a kind of a disconnection with complacency and a kind of a sense of being supported by the practice in just aware, oh, this is how it is right now. So we don't have to make it be any different. But the place I would encourage here is, so when there's all of these distractions happening, I mean, sometimes we will get distracted, absolutely, in daily life especially, you know, things happen. And you'll notice this moment of mindfulness returning. In that moment, you know, sometimes we kind of get the sense of, oh, all of that stuff, you know, that was a problem. But that's not what we're exploring here. It's like, well, okay, mindfulness has returned in the midst of all of this. What's that like? Is there some sense of connection there? Rather than there kind of being a collapse around, oh, there's so much distraction, it's hopeless. So kind of a curiosity around the distinction between, well, either a collapse of kind of like, this is hopeless, versus complacency, oh yeah, it's like this, you know the complacency can lead to a weakening of engagement over time. And yet it's a balance. It's like this very delicate edge, or this kind of place of, you know, we can fall off on one side with like giving up, or just like, and we can drop off on the other side of being like too tight and like, I've got to do it right. So it's a balance, and you'll probably go between those two. So just noticing that difference, and you'll begin to find that middle place where it's neither complacent nor kind of over involved thinking it has to be a certain way. Oh, there was a question in the chat box. Let me respond to that one. So this one, kind of a question around looking back. You know, I'd said this morning, look back at the arc of the practice and see what's happened. You know, how is there less reactivity? And this person saying, gee, I'm not sure. I almost wish I hadn't started, because it's really increased my awareness of the suffering in the world. And that, I think the person says, because of medical conditions, it feels like they can't really support other people out actively in the world. And so it feels a little helpless, but sometimes wonders if she'd be better off not being so aware. Does this make sense? Yes, this makes sense. I understand what you're saying. And there is definitely a place in practice where we become much more cognizant of suffering. But the perhaps a kind of a recognition that we can open to is that delusion is what has been falling away here. That suffering was there, has been there, and will continue to be there, whether you see it or not. If you're not seeing it, if you're not consciously aware of it, your system is in reaction mode to that suffering. And there's a way in which the system tends to perpetuate that suffering under cover we may not be consciously aware of it, but it's kind of eating at us underneath. And it will come to the surface at some point and be felt. And so while we might think not being aware is easier, it's actually better to be aware of the suffering than not be aware of it. To see the pain, the anguish, and to explore how we can meet that in a different way. Now, this question is pointing somewhat to, because of physical conditions, it's not so easy to actively engage in the world, perhaps, and exploring internally. I think here perhaps there's some view to look at the internal exploration of practicing metta, having compassion for others. For a lot of what we see too is really not only internal suffering, but external suffering. We see the suffering in the world. It's so painful to see it. And there's a period of time in practice in seeing that the mind can feel kind of overwhelmed by that. Just really opening to it, it can be kind of overwhelming. And the natural movement often is to do something, to try to fix it, to change it, to make it better. And there can be ways of engagement out of skillful means. We've talked about this, you know, that compassion can be a motivator, wisdom can be a motivator instead of greed, aversion, and delusion. More skillful to act from compassion than from anger. And so there are ways of engagement in the world through practice that become more and more available. But in my own journey, I've met a lot of different people. I mean, so one thing that this kind of the view that's underlying this in a way is kind of like, given the amount of suffering in the world, the only valuable response is some kind of physical action, some kind of doing something in active engagement, going out perhaps and working in a soup kitchen or supporting protests or something like that. You know, that there's a sense of there needing to be that kind of active engagement. I've seen that, you know, so one of the questions I look at myself is what is the expression of the mind that is free? What is the expression of the mind that's no longer caught up in greed, aversion, and delusion? How does that mind operate in the world? How does that mind and body operate in the world? Because it's not just about what the mind can do. It's also about what our physical limitations are, how the body can engage. So what is the expression of freedom? And in meeting various people in Burma, I spent some time in the Sagaing Hills in Burma, where I met a number of different monks and some very free beings I met up in the Sagaing Hills. And they're very different. The expression of one being's openness to wisdom and compassion looks very different than another being's. And so there's different ways of expressing that freedom. So the belief or the view, this I think some of the suffering that's coming in this questioner's experience is the idea that freedom expressed looks a particular way. That it looks like engagement. I've met some beings up in the Sagaing Hills who spend most of their day in silent meditation, being secluded. One of those beings had a very powerful impact on me, on the possibility of a mind that is that quiet, witnessing that. It had an effect on me. I didn't stay in that place. I came back and I'm more engaged. But there's a way that those conditions of how freedom is expressed will have ripple effects. And so there's a little bit of a kind of a trust or confidence that that freedom, that movement in the direction of letting go of greed, aversion, and delusion, however it's expressed, however it comes into our actions, that it does have a ripple effect. You know, one person meeting another one person and having their mind transformed through that meeting, you have no idea how vast the ripples from that can be. And it's challenging to see the pain, to see the suffering in the world. And so it's helpful to know when the mind is overwhelmed, when it's able to be with experience and when it's not able to be with experience. There are definitely times that it gets so strong that we might have to direct our attention away from a particular kind of suffering. And it's not about saying, denying that and saying that's not happening, but it's kind of more about a compassionate response for this being. This being can't really act skillfully right now in relationship to that experience. So this being needs to take a step back, gather some strength, allow there to be a settling of mind so that it can then come back into contact with that suffering. So yeah, let's take a few, see if there's any questions. In the room, see if there's any engagement that wants to happen here. And so, yeah, did you break the recording, Ying? I didn't notice, but